Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Stephen Schwartz, who's a senior fellow at the Samueli Institute and a research associate of cognitive sciences at the Laboratories for Fundamental Research. He's also the editor of the daily web publication SchwartzReport.net, where he identifies and analyzes trends that are affecting the future. He has an article currently at Explore, the Journal of Science and Healing, Meditation, the Controlled Psychophysical Self-Regulation That Works. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephen Schwartz.
Hello, Ian. How are you?
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
And to you.
And in the spirit of giving thanks, since so much of what I report, it's truthful and real, but often very depressing, do you have any good news for us here today and something to be thankful for on Thanksgiving?
Well, yes, I think there are several things that we can be thankful for. One is a movement that is growing in the United States that's receiving virtually no coverage by the corporate media, but which is having a significant effect, particularly up here in the Pacific Northwest in what we call Cascadia, but also in the Northeast, and that is the rise of the thriving, resilient community movement. And this is a movement very much like the Occupy movement, but with less confrontation and a much longer range vision, in which citizens seeing a problem in their community band together and develop a program without any government assistance at all that addresses problems that the community is experiencing, and because they are concerned about how in a period of a perfect storm of transition, individuals, families, and small communities are going to get through while maintaining a decent quality of life for everyone. And it's very promising, and it's one of the most positive things I know about.
And how can this be done coexisting with the broad U.S. economy, which is in distress and getting worse? I would hazard a bet that Europe will crash and drag us down. And paradoxically, you could make the case that President Obama's elections fortunes are in the hands of Angela Merkel.
I would completely agree with you. I think there's an excellent chance that the euro is going to crash. I'm going over tomorrow to speak at a conference in Lisbon, and that's one of the reasons I'm going and one of the things I'll be particularly looking for. But the answer, I think, to your question is how has this happened, is that the thriving resilience movement is made up of just ordinary folk who see a problem in their community and who band together and pool resources. Up here, I live on Whidbey Island off the coast of Washington State, off from Seattle, and we are, as an island, actually in worse shape than much of the rest of the country. For instance, one out of eight families in the United States are on food assistance. Here on the island, one out of four are, so we have a hard time. About 10% of our teenagers, for instance, are homeless or couch surfing. I mean, we have a number of them who live in the woods. We have a lot of unemployment, and yet, as a result of this interlocking network of thriving and resilient communities, activities, we have almost no crime. We don't have the teen pregnancies, the vandalism, the graffiti, the things that you would expect to see given the demographics of the island. And the reason we don't have those things is because of programs. Well, I'll just tell you about one, Whidbey Island Nourishes, which is a program run by volunteer women who fix lunches for children to take home over the weekend. They first got the school program to really do decent lunches, not pizza is a vegetable lunches, and then they send the children home with enough food really to feed a mother and a child and maybe another child for Saturday and Sunday. And for the homeless kids, we keep ice boxes stocked with food, and the children themselves police it We have a Good Cheer food bank, which not only provides food but teaches cooking classes and also maintains a large community, garden, which provides all the produce. And if you're a teenager who gets arrested for some minor thing, instead of being sent to juvenile hall, they send you down to work in the garden so that you grow food for probably your own family and families like yours. And therefore, the recidivism rate we have here has dropped like a rock.
You talked about how the young people that are both homeless and hungry in your community are fed. I guess they have access to a communal icebox, as you mentioned. What about shelter? How do you provide shelter?
Well, they have an interlocking system of the same kind of thing. I mean, the thing that has impressed me when I moved here 3 years ago, and now I've begun studying these movements all over the United States, is that they arise when a socially progressive, they occur in socially progressive communities, and they are distinct from church activities and other similar sorts of things in the sense that you're not required to listen to the sermon or join the club or profess the political beliefs or whatever that are typical of charity movements traditionally. These, what makes these movements stand out is that they treat the recipients of their programs with respect and see them not as failed people who need to be saved or who need to be instructed, but as citizens and fellow members of the community who have just had a tough time or are experiencing a tough time for a period, but not as a totality of their lives. And what's intriguing to me that I've just been doing research on is that a number of the recipients go on to get their lives sorted out and then become volunteers to help others. So that this is a kind of self-nurturing program. It generates its own volunteer staff.
So how will Thrive thrive if the broader economy disintegrates, if we go from a recession to a double dip or even a depression, which could happen with a euro crash and, you know, the resulting domino effect over here?
Well, I'm looking at the Thrive communities. I think what's going to happen, what is happening, is that increasingly more and more people get involved in these and they feel that it takes them from being anonymous members of the community to being someone who feels not only a part of the community but a contributor to the community. There's going to be a lot more gardening. I can already see this happening. There are going to be a lot more farmers markets. I've been focusing particularly on food because everybody eats, and it seemed a very good place to start the research. We're beginning to do a research project now with Seattle University in Antioch and the Center for Ethical Leadership up here to really work out what are the sociometrics of a thriving and resilient community. I mean, how does a community know how to become thriving and resilient, the question you're asking? But the answers appear to be that it involves a kind of old-fashioned American communitarianism.
So how would that translate to urban communities? Because obviously, I don't know what the percentage of urban to rural in this country is, but I suspect the majority of Americans live in either urban or suburban communities.
Absolutely. Well, it's developing as a neighborhood activity, as if the neighborhood were a village or a small town. There are joint gardens. It's sort of like, if you remember back in the early part of the 20th century with the Victory Gardens that were grown during the First World War, where a neighborhood or a block would get together and start a community garden. So that part of it is this whole community gardening effort that's going on, again, focusing on food. But the other aspects are the the linkage, for instance, of food banks and thrift stores, where people donate stuff and the sale of that those things finance the food banks and the cooking classes and the daycare classes and daycare centers, also caring for the elderly. The idea is for a sort of human-sized unit of people, whether they're in a city or whether they're in a small community, to join together to assist each other in getting through a very difficult passage, which both of us, I think, believe is headed our way. It's going to be interesting to see how, as stresses increase, these community efforts grow. But what has struck me as particularly interesting is that they are all spontaneously arising. As I have gotten into this research, I find over and over again communities that just begin it, with no reference really to anybody else, just someone in the community starts it and it kind of catches fire, very much like Occupy.
Again, I'm speaking with Stephen Schwartz, who's a senior fellow at the Samueli Institute and a research associate of cognitive sciences at the Laboratories for Fundamental Research. And we're talking about positive societal trends here that we could be thankful for on Thanksgiving in the face of a lot of bad news and perhaps even worse news coming down the pike. Tell me, though, about a cultural shift in values and attitudes. Is it happening? And it certainly is necessary to happen. In other words, to embrace what you're talking about, the kind of humility of community activities, as opposed to the rampant materialism of keeping up with the Kardashians and all of that stuff that we have on television of wealth envy and unlimited consumption.
Well, I think that what is happening, and this is clearly a movement, is that the United States is fracturing into regions. I mean, what I am describing that's going on in Cascadia, for instance, I don't know how it would work in, say, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, East Texas. What I've just finished a research project on is the issue social values, social wellness, because one of the things that I see emerging, and you can see it both in the Occupy movement and in the Thrive and Resilience movement, is the shift of focus to a orientation towards social wellness. And that means not just health, but a healthy social structure, a caring social structure, communities that are making a shift, and of course it starts with individuals. I mean, this all starts, and that's what's intriguing to me about it, is this is a movement of individual choice. It's not a program coming from the top down like a government program. It's coming from the bottom up, and it's taking a number of different forms, but in this fracturing that is occurring, if you look at the research data, you can see that in those communities which have a social progressive vision, the thrive and nurturing and resilience movement is arising, and also this is in the cities, this is where the Occupy movement is strong. If you look in comparison to those states where the conservative theocratic worldview obtains, you see very different social outcomes. For instance, in those states, and it's roughly the red-blue states, but not entirely, but if you look at those states where conservative theocratic view of the world and how it operates is in control, you see a lot of teen pregnancy, a lot of spousal abuse, a lot of obesity, diabetes. I mean, it's worth noting that one out of four women in the United States are on medication, antipsychotic, antidepression medication. I mean, in terms of national wellness, if one out of four of the women in the country has to take medication to get through their lives, can you consider this a this society well in the broader sense? And in this movement that is arising, and which I think we should give thanks for, what you see is a decrease in obesity, a decrease in childhood obesity, in childhood diabetes, a decrease in spousal physical abuse, a decrease in divorce, a decrease in imprisonment. I mean, this movement is producing social wellness. And so I think it's quite legitimate to say we now have research data that tell us that social values are right. I mean, the conservatives are correct. Social values matter. The question is, what does the data tell us about differing social values? And what is very clear is that in those areas where a socially progressive, compassionate, life-affirming worldview obtains with the individuals in the community and the communities themselves, the outcome for just ordinary people is significantly better, and that there is greater social wellness than in those communities which have a theocratic, conservative, right-wing view.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Stephen Schwartz.
Okay, thank you, Ian, and a good Thanksgiving to you.
And a happy Thanksgiving to you as well. Again, I've been speaking with Stephen Schwartz, a senior fellow at the Samueli Institute and a research associate of cognitive sciences at the Laboratories for Fundamental Research. He's also the editor of the daily web publication SchwartzReport.net, where he identifies and analyzes trends that are affecting the future. He has an article currently at Explore, the Journal of Science and Healing, Meditation, the Controlled Psychophysical Self-Regulation That Works. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasts, and you can sign up there at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Bye.